ARUP Institute for Learning presents Insight.
Education.
Leader.
Pain. Technology.
Experiment.
Quality.
Esoteric.
Informatics.
Clinical utility.
Patient care.
Research.
Laboratory.
Excellence.
Join us as we delve into emerging topics presented by ARUP medical directors who are faculty in the Department of Pathology at the University of Utah School of Medicine. A toxicology test can be used for many different purposes. The results from toxicology testing shape diagnosis and treatment decisions. ARUP Technical Product Manager Golden Welch sits down with University of Utah pathology resident Dr. Maggie Hopkins and Dr. Frederick Strathman, Medical Director in Toxicology at ARUP Laboratories and an Associate Professor of Pathology at the University of Utah, to discuss analytical methods in toxicology. On today's segment, the discussion will focus on patient testing, screening versus definitive testing.
This is Golden Welch. I am sitting here with Dr. Maggie Hopkins and Dr. Fred Strathman. Today we're here to discuss toxicology and considerations for clinicians in ordering and interpreting toxicology testing. Dr. Hopkins?
The cases that we'll discuss here today are taken from a paper in publication by American Journal of Clinical Pathology by Dr. Michael Ward and Dr. Fred Strathman on some consultation cases that we received for the PATH on-call service. And this will be a series of three topics on toxicology testing involving testing methods, sample collection, sample type, and interpretation of results. This will be the topic of testing methodology. We'll cover two cases here and some considerations of testing on these cases. So patient A is receiving prescriptions for Subutex, which is buprenorphine, and Valium, which is diazepam. Patient B is receiving prescriptions for Percocet, which is oxycodone plus acetaminophen, and Klonopin, which is clonazepam. As part of their treatment plans, both of these patients have signed pain management contracts that outline regular drug testing to determine both their compliance with the prescription medications and the avoidance of both non-prescribed medications and illicit drugs.
Dr. Hopkins, what's the purpose of toxicology testing in this type of setting?
The purpose of testing here includes confirming that the patient is actually taking the drug that was prescribed to them. Unfortunately, there is a financial incentive for patients to continue to fill their prescriptions without taking the drug because these drugs have a very high street value. Another purpose is to make sure that the patient is not taking other prescription medication or illegal drugs that would be a violation of the pain contract and could be potentially dangerous combinations for them.
And how would you go about choosing the appropriate test in these cases?
Well, a clinician would typically start with a type of screening test, which may be done point of care or maybe sent out to a laboratory, and they will follow up with some form of definitive testing. But in some cases, definitive testing may be the correct initial choice. And in some other cases, if the expected result is achieved adequately by screening methods, then a confirmation test is not necessary and can be confusing.
Dr. Strathman, can you explain the difference between a screening test and a definitive or confirmatory test?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the concepts are really kind of evolving still, I think. A lot of that is centered around reimbursement strategies and where those things are kind of going to land. But in the past, and kind of what Dr. Hopkins had described, we talk a lot about screening and confirmation testing. And screening and confirmation is more of a forensic type of workflow where we have a more non-specific method. If anything is positive, then we would reflex that to some kind of confirmation method. And the idea behind that is the more non-specific screening method that's being done. The idea really is to generate a lot of negatives. You know, if you're not sure you're going to find anything or you don't think you're going to find anything, then a screening method makes the most sense. You want it to be fast, you want it to be relatively cheap, and you want it to be at least be sensitive enough to find what you're looking for, but not necessarily tell you everything that you're looking for. So then once you have that positive result, then one of the things you can do is you can reflex it to confirmation. The idea with a confirmatory test then is that you're finding the same answer again or the same results again, but this time by a different method and typically by a more specific method. So a classic pairing of two things would be an immunoassay screen with a confirmation by either mass spectrometry with liquid chromatography or gas chromatography.
Is the definitive or confirmatory test more sensitive and specific?
You know, it's a good question and it really just depends. And so certainly more specific is almost always the case. It's something that we typically, if we do a screen, a good example would be opiates, right? An opiate positive could be a number of different things. And so we need a confirmatory test to actually tell us what it actually was. But in terms of sensitivity, it really depends. One of the differences between immunoassays as a screening method is you get a summation of things. So you get cross-reactivity with a lot of different drugs and metabolites, which may give you a positive result, and then you now split those into individual drugs and metabolites for measurement by more specific methods like mass spectrometry. So sometimes you can get more sensitivity out of an immunoassay, although specificity sometimes can be a problem there.
Why not skip that additional step and go straight to a more definitive method?
There are some benefits to starting with a screening test because of time. If that can be done more quickly, the complexity of these type of testing is a lot less, so they can be done in an office setting by support staff. The cost of the test is usually a lot less. And there are, as Dr. Strathman was saying, better sensitivity for some analytes with that type of screen, such as for marijuana and buprenorphine, which is the case with one of our patients here.
So the idea, though, behind sort of definitive testing as a first line is something that is kind of evolving. And we at AREP have been one of the early adopters of some technology that allows you to do sort of more definitive type testing, but upfront. And so we're using mass spectrometry to be able to do an initial screen, still qualitative in nature, but at the same time get more specific results. And that's finding, I think, a niche where individuals are looking for a relatively rapid test, but also at the same time need more specificity than a typical immunoassay. And I think it's really all about sort of uncoupling this idea of an immunoassay screen is required before we move on to mass spectrometry testing. One of the biggest challenges has really been sort of disentangling the notion of confirmatory testing, meaning specific, meaning having to happen after an immunoassay screen or some kind of a screen, and also quantitation. All of those kinds of concepts are really sort of intertwined. And what we're trying to move away from is this idea that in a forensic setting, you screen the results, you go back to the original sample, reprep it, and now you confirm it by a different method. If you use an appropriately specific method at the very first start, then there's really no reason to go back and confirm anything. And we do this with lots of other tests. You know, when is the last time you've heard of a screen with reflex to confirmation for testosterone or a screen with reflex for vitamin D? You know, we just don't do it. But in toxicology, it's sort of just the norm. But it's really just sort of an antiquated way of thinking when it comes to forensic testing that we've got to find it by a screen. For pain management, it's been a very interesting area because what we have seen is a complete lack of a need for that initial screen. What Dr. Hopkins described makes sense in the setting of point-of-care devices. And so there you get a result very quickly, which is oftentimes what a physician needs to be able to confront or to consult with a patient. But you're always going to need some more specific type of method to back that up.
Are there scenarios where a point-of-care cup or screen is appropriate, and to stop there, not to continue on with a more confirmatory, more definitive method?
It always comes down to any unexpected result, whether it be mass spectrometry, whether it be an immunoassay, whether it be any other even more nonspecific method immunoassay. If it's an unexpected result, whether it be an unexpected positive or an unexpected negative, should always require some kind of investigation by the physician. And that could be calling a laboratory to find out, why is this negative when I had expected a positive? Why is this positive when I expected a negative? But if you're expecting somebody to be on oxycodone and they get a positive oxycodone immunoassay, then there may be no reason to go forward with any kind of testing. You kind of got the answer that you want. But mostly what we see with point-of-care devices, they really fit where physicians want to be able to counsel the patient immediately. And so even though they're not going to do anything in terms of terminating a pain contract or any kind of punitive interaction with the patient, what they might do is they might say, okay, well, I see this positive cocaine immunoassay. Do you have anything you want to tell me? And they may have a patient that says, you know what, I made a mistake. They got exactly what they needed. There's no reason to confirm that either. But the danger comes into when you have a patient who says, I've never done that. I don't know what you're talking about. And then, of course, it requires confirmation. It needs to go up. So most of the physicians that we've interacted with, it really gives them a chance to interact with the patient while they're still in the clinic, you know, while they still have that chance to kind of have that one-on-one conversation. And depending upon how high risk the patient is, there are often times where initial point of care or immunoassay results may be what is between that patient getting a refill. And so they might need to wait for the confirmation test before they get their medication refilled. So physicians are using them in different ways. And I think the biggest danger is when physicians use them and not understanding the limitations. So that being false positives, but also false negatives.
On the next segment.
One thing I would add to that as well with the immunoassay testing is it's sort of built on this idea of specificity as well. So, yeah. You know, the two illustrations that Dr. Hopkins talked about with buprenorphine and THC, those are relatively high-performing immunoassays. And so they're relatively specific for the drug and the metabolite.